Hi there, my name is Jamie Mackay and I lead the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. The following podcast is part of a series of interviews with graduates of the part-time M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in the Arts programme. This programme is delivered on a blended learning model but can also be studied fully remotely. All participants on the programme have a role as an arts educator and the programme is designed to help them develop their teaching practice and their arts practice, and it culminates in a self-designed final project. For more information on the programme, check the website on rcs.ac.uk/med. In this podcast, I was delighted to be speaking to Leslie Eady. Leslie is a Programmes and Delivery Officer with Time for Inclusive Education. She also works part-time as a drama teacher and coach, currently part of the team at Glasgow Academy, is a visiting assessor for Advanced Higher Drama at SQA, and a transitions coach at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. Leslie completed the M.Ed in 2022, and her final project centred on LGBT inclusive education, how people voice can impact teachers' understanding of the need for inclusive practice in schools. Her research interests lie in learner autonomy, diversity, equality and inclusion. Could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Yeah, my name is Leslie Eady and I split my week in my job. I work part-time for a school as a drama teacher, and I work part-time for the charity Time for Inclusive Education as a programmes and delivery officer, where I'm still doing quite a lot of arts projects within that. At the moment, I've got a verbatim theatre project which has been piloted across Scotland with different year groups. I'm working on a Screen Scotland project at the moment as well, and I'm looking at STEAM, which is quite exciting, with another graduate from the M.Ed, Lauren, who is doing lots of STEAM stuff in a school. I'm working with her on some resources as well.
That's great, thank you. So when you're working with learners, what's your goal?
I kind of like to collaborate with them. I think it's really important for me that there's respect, mutual respect between us, but that there's not like a massive hierarchy, that it's not like a me and them. It's just us that's in the room, and I like to make sure that there's trust between us. So that they can do their very best, so that they can be successful. So I think I'm looking for, as a goal, a connection, a way to get to know them, just so that I can make individually, so that I can use correct strategies to make sure that they get to know their own potential. Because I think sometimes kids just aren't aware of how good they are at things. They can be not confident about who they are. And I think if you get to know them on quite a good level, then they feel more kind of at home, just saying, actually, I'm quite good at this and I want to try. And it helps them to push their own boundaries. So I like that idea of getting a connection with them, which helps them to be ambitious with what they're doing, and it helps them to set their own goals as well. Letting people voice is something I'm really, really interested in. So setting your own goals gives yourself a voice.
And what barriers get in the way of achieving that goal?
Time. I think a lot of teachers will probably say time is a barrier to lots of people, and especially if you are in, I think, a subject which you only get kids one time a week, it's really, really difficult to get to know people well enough in that time, and for that trust and stuff to grow within that time. Obviously, when you've got higher up the school at 5th and 6th years, then that's a lot easier to get to know kids a lot better. I think as well, time is an issue when it comes to like curricular expectations as well, because there's this set thing. Schools are still very, very exam driven, results driven. And the kind of thing I'm talking about getting to know people, it's play driven. It's not driven by this results and by these things. And I think that can be really, really difficult with time as well, to get round to that point where you are allowing them time to play. Is hard. So I'm kind of hoping that in the curricular reform which is coming up, that we have a wee bit more time for kids to do that kind of thing. I think the other barrier that I've noticed within the last, definitely within the last 10 years, is social media. It's a real barrier to confidence in a lot of the kids, especially not so much in the school that I'm working in just now, but in a school that I was working in the past. I've noticed over the years the embarrassment level that kids have. Like 15 years ago, you'd be doing a stimulus and kids would be jumping in each other's arms and being silly. I think that threat of them being filmed or being called out is so real to them that it stops them. It's a real shame that that's put upon them, that they have to look cool at all times. And you used to be cool because you were funny, and yet it doesn't seem to happen that way anymore. If you're funny and you're good at drama or you're good at art or music, it doesn't seem to be a cool thing to be anymore. And I feel really sorry for them that that's what they're growing up with. They're growing up with not just with the threat of being slagged off in class, they're growing up with the threat of being, you know, targeted, bullied through social media just for being good at something. And I think that really stops them playing as well.
And what strategies do you use then to help you achieve your goal and or deal with these barriers?
I think I'll start with the social media one, actually, and work my way backwards to towards time. I think we need to use it. We need to use the platforms. We need to look at the misinformation that's on there. And actually, one of the projects, the Screen Scotland project I'm doing, is about misinformation on media and how it impacts children. But I think even in the classroom, we need to understand what's happening on social media platforms as teachers. And I know lots of us, me, definitely me, too old to be using. I'm not like going home and like making a TikTok video, but I think it's good to understand how these things work and how they can, how they navigate them. And using the language, I think, within the classroom as well is really, really important. Like, for example, knowing that they know exactly where their pals are on Snapchat at all times. Just telling them that you know little bits about it and stuff as well can be really helpful, because they go, right, maybe that's not something we can use then as a tool for badness. Maybe we can use it for good. What I did during COVID was used TikTok dancing for my dance classes, because I teach drama and dance. So I was using that for them to do their homework on, and to, because they were accessing it all the time anyway. So I was like, okay, so let's do this, let's use it, and let's see how we can use it better. And I think if you are looking at it in the way of looking for misinformation, then you start to look at critical literacy skills, and you start to think, okay, if you're finding this out on TikTok, how do you know it's real? How do you know it's right? You know, how... that Instagram post there, what's behind it? How can we use research skills and critical literacy skills to make sure that media is being used for good rather than just for calling people out? So call them out on it, call them out on their use of social media, and try and look for ways to make it better. All of that means time for planning. And I think planning is very important for time management for any of this stuff. And with time as well, making sure that there's time within the curricular day or within when you're with them. And this is hard for me just now, because I'm only in a school 2 days a week, that you're available for the kids as well if they want to, if there's something they want to come to you about. And whether that's something to do with their curricular expectations, or if it's just about making opportunities for them to do things that are out with school, so that they can get that chance to play. So if you've got, for example, I was in a private school for a couple of years, and curricular was very, very results driven, and the kids were great. But they got their playtime after school because we did lots of, there was like a tech club where they would come in and do lots of production art stuff, and there was lots of different clubs for different year groups to come and look at some different work. There was some performance work going on. We did like the play brainstorm with them, and it meant they got to devise their own work. And that was really nice because it was something very different from what they were doing within class. And again, that all comes down to time, because that's a big time commitment from teachers. And I think arts teachers in particular, art, drama, music, media, all of encompassing all of those things within that are really expected to give a lot of their time, which can be quite hard, quite burnout-y. So we need to look after ourselves within that too. So that all comes back down to that planning. So if I'm going to give of myself, what can I do without actually burning myself out? So yeah. So that was a massive answer there.
Nope, great. Covered all the points. Thank you. How do you measure your success as an arts educator?
Okay. I think in a way that society doesn't think that we do. Society thinks success is about getting an A. And if you're Scottish, being on River City. That's, are you on the telly yet? That's something that I'm sure my gran used to say to me all the time. Why are you not on the telly yet? And I don't think that is a measure of success, because I think, well, it is. No, that's a lie. It is, of course, it's a measure of success, and it's great to have an achievement like that. But for a lot of kids, and for me, looking at a lot of the kids that I've got around about me, it's not about getting them all A's. If they did get all A's, amazing, yes, hurrah. But it's about getting that strong C that didn't think they were going to get it. It's about just seeing progress from everyone round about you, rather than just those kids that are the strong A's. And I think a lot of that is done through observation of your learners individually, and just seeing them grow. And that can be shown in lots and lots of different ways. It could just be in changes in engagement. It could be the fact that a wee quiet person suddenly starts asking questions and starting, it could be their ability to help others or to offer ideas within our group. It could be, they've started to be a bit brave and take a wee risk. Maybe they don't usually do anything, and they've got up and they've tried to do a wee bit of improvisation. And to me, that's as much of a success as a straight A student coming in and blasting an acting exam. And I think another measure of success for me is, are they smiling? Are they having fun and talking to you? Are they coming to do some things that are extra just because they're enjoying themselves? And I think that shows that their well-being is good as well, and that they're mentally healthy. So looking at the whole person, not just at that little bit of paper that they get one day in their life.
And how do you describe the ideal relationship between you and your learner?
Okay. I think I said earlier on about hierarchies and just being more on a level. And I think that comes with respect. Both respecting each other, being honest with each other, trusting each other, and just having an atmosphere in your class that's quite honest. Where I don't always remember, one of my first times, and my private school a couple of years ago, hold my hands up in class and saying, I'm wrong about that, sorry. I said something yesterday and it wasn't right. And I want to tell you that it wasn't right. And then just all looking at me like, why are you telling me you were wrong? And I'm like, because it's honest, and I'm fallible. And I think it's really, really important for young people to know that you're fallible, so that they are able to try things out and, make mistakes, and just to be, have that atmosphere of collaboration where there's no silly question between either of us, and where it's kind of, it's a growth relationship, where things always get better rather than people being scared of getting into trouble, which, I mean, sometimes people get into trouble because they're naughty, and that was usually me when I was at school, yeah, just that idea that there's no silly question, and that we're in this together. That would be my ideal relationship.
What job title are you most comfortable with?
That's a hard one, Jamie, because I've done so many different things within my career, and I've directed theatre, I've done dance, I've been drama teacher, doing programs delivery. So there's so many different titles that I'm given at the moment, and lots of different jobs. And I don't know. I've come up with one. I've come up with one for you, and I don't know if it's. I don't know. I see myself as more of a facilitator, like kind of leading people to what they're doing, but they have to do it by themselves. So I think I've coined a new term. I'm a learning facilitator in all of my jobs, because when I go out to do workshops with Ty and that I'm still going out, I'm talking to kids, I'm doing workshops, I'm talking to teachers, doing workshops with them, and I'm trying to get them to learn things, but I'm not, drilling it. They have to do it. So they have to do the learning. So that's what I'm having. Learning facilitator.
Thank you. Okay, so what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
Oh, I think I've said honesty, respect, and trust a million times, but I'm not going to go for them. That's not going to be my values. I think they should be intrinsic within your practice, and I think they probably are in most teachers' practice. I'm going to go for creativity, risk, and connection. Because I think relationships are important. It's important to push your boundaries, and in order to push your boundaries, you need to be thinking outside of the box. So that's why I'm going for those three.
Okay, slight change of questions here. If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
Okay, so I'm very into equity and equality, and really thinking from lots of different sides of of the coin, and looking at all kind of critical literacy stuff. So I think my obvious people would be Paulo Freire or Augusto Boal. But I'm going to go for someone who I think embodied their values within his practice. And that was a man called John Gardner, who was the principal of my drama school. When I left school to go to drama school, I had no idea that it would have been the RSCMD at that point. I had no idea it even existed, because I come from a SIMD1 all over town, and the back arse of Scotland in Linwood. And nobody at my school, when I said I want to be an actor, I want to do this, like nobody knew what that was. Nobody knew how I could get there, what I was doing. So I got myself a copy of the Stage newspaper and just looked up all the different drama schools that were on it, and I wanted to get out of Dodge as well. So I went down to I ended up in Hertfordshire, at a school called Hertfordshire Theatre School, which a lot of the teachers from there ended up starting up the Musical Theatre Academy in London, the 2-year course. But it was a man called John Gardner, who wrote some plays. He wrote some dodgy plays. The Dracula Spectacular is one of his big ones. But he was a lovely man, a really, really lovely man, who wanted to do something that. He wanted to set up a school that would support people in acting and musical theatre. Now, I went to do a 3-year acting and musical theatre course, and realised within about 6 weeks of it that musical theatre wasn't for me, because I was a wee bit too weird. He just gave let me have a voice. He let me risk. He let me play. He let me write things. Let me put it in the showcase of our final year and 3rd year, when everyone else was going on singing and dancing. I did a bit of autobiographic theatre, so I should probably have been in the applied theatre course at RCS, but I didn't know it existed. So I just think he gave me a scholarship as well. So which is why I ended up going there. So basically, Yeah, John Gardner, I'm going to give it out to him because he was a voice. He gave voice to the oppressed. Me and a couple of boys from Liverpool were his scholarship students for that year. And all the years in there, he always gave like full scholarships to at least three people from disadvantaged places.
That's great, thank you. So if you could ask him one question, what would it be?
Well, since his college, disappeared because he obviously kept giving money to disadvantaged people. I would ask him, would you do anything differently to keep your college going?
And how do you think you would answer?
He'd say, absolutely not. I live my truth. Was a great man.
Excellent. Thank you, Lizzie. Final question then. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
I think I want to talk a wee bit about just about doing the M.Ed, and the fact that it just invigorated me a wee bit. It gave me purpose. God forbid, it gave me a wee love of doing some research, and it gave me reason to research as well and to find things that I was really, really passionate about. So it connected me to what mattered to me, and made me not be complacent anymore. And I think when you've been teaching for quite a wee while, you can become complacent and think, well, I know how to do this, and it just, the wheels keep turning. So it just made me want more for both myself and for my learners as well. So I think that was something that I really, really enjoyed. And not everybody wants to be a deputy head. Some people want to just be really good at what they do. And I think that it's, exciting to be able to do a course where you are looking at how you can be just better rather than better for a, for a reason that's going to get you more money or get you up the ladder. It's just, if you can be just better, why shouldn't you want to just be better at something? So so I really enjoyed my time doing that, and I really enjoyed researching and finding out more.
Thank you so much, Lizzie, for taking the time to answer these questions today. It's been delightful. For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.